Hey buds, I'm your host Sam.
And I'm your co-host Ozzy.
And I'm Mike with Drow TV.
And this is
Cushion Crime.
True Crime Podcast.
Yep. Buds, welcome back to another episode of Cushion Crime. We're super excited because we have Mike from Drow TV with us today. How are you today, Mike?
Welcome.
Hey, what's happening? How are you guys?
Good.
Pleasure to have you.
All right, so welcome on. So these people don't know who you are, so who are you? What do you do? What's going on?
I bet you everyone's like, who are you?
Well, who I am is... I'm Mike. I run and host different shows and segments on Drow TV, where we are a cannabis media company just trying to network and build community, especially here in Central Florida, in the cannabis industry. And, you know, we're happily every day trying to speak with different and amazing human beings like yourselves. And, you know, really trying to, build a network. And I think this community of cannabis, you look at all the different shapes, sizes, colors, you know, I think it's really a community where we can build each other up. And so, yeah, I'm excited to, be in it like yourselves and, doing something that we enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. So you just had me on your podcast. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast and how you came up with it and what it's about?
Sure. So I've done some other podcasts, and my girlfriend says, I don't think you like anything more than weed. So,
I mean, we can relate.
Yeah. Hey, you know, when you know, you know. But, yeah, I've been a DJ since I was 15 years old. I just turned 40. I have a record label. I have a background in broadcasting. So I always wanted to do something in the cannabis industry, but never really knew what to do. And having done some other podcasts, I have a podcast called Break It Down on my record label, where we interview artists about their songs, albums, music videos, stuff like that.
That's cool.
One of my buddies called me drunk one night, and he said, he thought some of my episodes were going on too long. So he said, hey, just get to the story. And so I thought, you know, everybody has a first time story of either the first time they smoked or the first time they got high, whether it was the same or different. And, so I said, you know what, maybe that's a good way to get people to talk to me is, hey, how about we start a show where we invite guests on and they can tell about their first time story. And if whether they're in the cannabis industry or not, I mean, we've talked with people who used to smoke and now they don't, but they still wanted to share their story. So fine, come on and talk about what you have going on. And,
right.
So, yeah, it's...
Especially, like, with the podcast group just growing as well.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like, your guys' podcast, it's great because it's a whole nother lane for people in the cannabis realm to gravitate towards, whether it's our show or your show or some other kind of show. There's plenty for everybody, and it's awesome. So, thank you, guys.
No problem. So we met you at KushCon, for a little background for everybody. So we met Mike at KushCon. He came up to us at our booth, which was like janky compared to everybody else's, but it's all right. It's whatever. But
hey, it was our first time.
Yeah.
My first time. Like his podcast.
So Mike came up to us and it just had a great conversation. So thank you for coming up to us, because I went on his podcast and now he's here, obviously. So what did you think that you got from going to KushCon?
Got a lot of free edibles, that's for sure.
That's definitely what happened.
Yep.
Well, like I said, when I, you know, introduced myself and Drew TV, we were mainly there for networking purposes, but I've been smoking weed since 97. And as much as I know, there wasn't a whole lot of science back then. I mean, cannabis was like a scientific word. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
it was like a forbidden word too.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, you know, to say that was worse than, not worse, but like, you know, marijuana was worse enough. You said cannabis and it was like, oh, it's just as bad.
So taboo. Yeah.
Big on education, so I also wanted to go and just learn from different vendors what they have to offer, whether it's a product or a service. I mean, there was a company there that did, you know, product testing. You could send them your flower, and so yeah, really, it was to have fun, to network and meet people like you guys, and you know, really just like yourselves, keep the name and the brand out there and see what opportunities and relationships can be built.
I totally agree. And that's one thing that I told Sam about. It's like a lot of these companies viewed our, you know, kiosk or booth or whatever you want to call it. Like not a lot of people were pretty impressed with it, but in reality, we just went there just for networking purposes. We're not really into that sales sort of aspect.
And that's exactly what I told him too on his podcast. Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much the reason why we went there, just for networking, just like yourself.
Yeah, when Sam and I were talking about this, you know, we were talking about how it's a lot different from vendors that have to reach a sales quota or, you know, they need to make a profit. Otherwise, they, you know, lost on it.
Or, yeah, it was like a waste of a trip or something like that.
Yeah, and I, from, you know, some of the people I spoke with, it wasn't as busy or as profitable as they thought it would be, so... not a knock on KushCon. I think it's more of a telling of the economic times we live in. But also, man, I'm not sure exactly where I was going with that. But no, I think I mean,
The whole world itself is just the economic world right now. It's just had a crash. It's just impossible right now.
Yeah,
to
it's
get even parts.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think where I was going with that was, you know, where the other vendors there had to focus on, sales and reaching numbers and, you know, you guys could go into it with a different approach and really take time to meet with the other business owners there. And, you know, you don't, you're not some motive of trying to upsell them something. Right. You know, so but that's great. Sam had mentioned you guys got some free space to do a podcast, so that's pretty cool.
So it was just, it was nice. I do have to shout them out for that, because Lindsay was the one that was running it, and I had reached out and I was like, I would love to go, but I think $1,000 for us at this stage, just for the booth and it for not to have any, actually, I think it was like 2000. I was like, there's no way. I'm sorry. We'll not be able to do that.
Yeah,
thank you
like,
so much, but no. And then
like
she reached out to me. She's like, but please. And I was like, okay, fine. That's fine. We'll come. So, but it was definitely interesting. It was definitely cool. And we met like a lot of cool people like yourself there as well. So it was great.
No, there was a couple, there was a lot of cool people there. There was definitely a lot. And I definitely learned a lot, like as far as like their products goes and everything.
Yeah. And then one thing that we did do, and I don't know if we told you guys, that we had our fill out sheet and we had like an email sheet. And I don't know if you put your email down with your favorite strain, but we did want to ask you what your favorite strain was for today for our strain of the day. And then we'll have Ozzy.
For the Ivory Man.
Ozzy is an Ivory Man for some reason.
Nice. Mr. Ivory Man, what I have for you today, I have some key lime mints. This is a purple, very fruity. I pretty much primarily smoke joints, so when it burns, it burns. It burns nice and it burns good. So key lime mints is what I'm on right now. A buddy of mine grew it, and thankful for the fact that he's good enough to grow it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So
homegrown.
Let's take it away then to the Ivory Man. Today's strain of the day is brought to you by Key Lime Mints. I don't know if it's the same thing as your friend grows, but this is brought to you by weedmaps.com.
Weedmaps.
According to weedmaps.com, Key Lime Mints is a beautiful balanced cross between Key Lime Mints and Kush Mints, creating a medical chilled out high. Kush Mints is a popular strain with cookies family, so you get a little of the cookie vibe coming through these strain. Expertly grown, these buds are frosty as fuck. I'm not joking, that's literally what it says.
This is true. These
buds are frosty as fuck with a very high THC level. You won't be disappointed. Are you disappointed?
No, I'm not disappointed, and they are frosty as fuck.
Has 25-30% THC. People has reported to that it helps with stress, muscle pain, fatigue, inflammatory spots, bipolar disorder.
If you hear that knocking sound, that's our dog. He's wagging his tail. He's happy.
Dogs make every video better, so.
But that was brought to you by weedmaps.com.
I do not disagree with their assessment. Not bipolar, so I couldn't attest to that one.
Are you sure? I'm just kidding. Yeah, so that's awesome. That actually does sound really good. I'm kind of jealous that your buddy grew it, because I would love to try some frosty.
It's going to be a heck of a job to grow different types of strains.
Oh, my God.
That'd be cool.
I could never. It would.
It's super stressful, he tells me.
Yeah, I have a black thumb. I kill everything, so.
I mean, I can't imagine. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. So I did also want to talk about one thing that seemed to be like a big topic while we were at KushCon, which was the arrests and the people that are still in prison for nonviolent marijuana crimes. So, yeah. So while we're at KushCon, we met Rick DeLisi, which was the longest person that was held on marijuana charges. He was arrested in 1989 because of the war on drugs, and he was sentenced to 90 years, and he spent 31 years in prison for trafficking of marijuana.
Wow.
Wow.
And it was a nonviolent crime.
31 years.
31 years. So he was the longest ever marijuana prisoner, which is crazy.
I mean, there's people still in prison until this day.
Yeah. Actually, in the last 20 years, 15.7 million people have been arrested for marijuana offenses. And the marijuana industry had made $10.4 billion in 2018 alone.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was 4 years ago.
Yeah. Imagine now. And there's more states that are legal now.
Sure.
Yeah, like, what would happen if they're, like, legal now in their states and they're in prison for it?
Well, that's the thing. That's what's so fucked up. So that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it, is because there is what Rick DeLisi got out from was the Last Prisoner Project, and I kind of wanted to bring that a little bit to their, like, attention, because they're a national nonprofit who's dedicated to cannabis criminal justice reform. So basically their views are, if there's 15.7 million people that have been arrested, but we've made $10.4 billion on legal marijuana sales, why are we putting people in jail for something that we're profiting from? That doesn't make any sense.
All I can say is preach, woman.
Preach. I think I have an answer.
Go ahead.
Okay, so it's a long one. I'm going to make it short, okay?
You can make it long.
Our justice system is designed to do a few different things. One of them is we have private prisons. And so those private prisons, whether it's, I mean, technically slave labor, what they pay some of these prisoners to build things or run things or maintain things. And then we have a system where, you know, the war on drugs
it's an excuse to provide bigger budgets to police forces, and which of course, when you go through the numbers, like you know, mentioned some of them, you know, you go through the people that are arrested for nonviolent crimes. I mean, even distribution and trafficking. I mean, what's trafficking? If I was caught with, you know, six baggies of, you know, 6/8 or something, am I considered a trafficker? Right. So, you know, our justice system is designed for, I mean, it's a system. So, not to get too stoned on it.
But is it the system, or is it the people in the system that has control?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, I don't think much has changed, no matter which party is in there. So, to me, I would say it's the system, because even when there is people in there, you know, everybody said, you know, Trump was going to change things, and what really changed in the 4 years he was there? Everybody said Obama was going to change things. He was in there 8 years, and Bush and everybody else. And so, you know, I think unfortunately the system is designed where even what's decriminalized, it means you can possess it, right? But you can't buy it and you can't sell it. So that's where legalization is, you know, I can buy it, I can sell it, and whether it wants to be regulated, fine. But decriminalization, it still gives a police officer an opportunity where, you know, to pull you over, to arrest you, to detain you. And this is where the war on drugs has given them almost unlimited power to do these types of things. And, excuse me. You know, a lot of times an altercation with the police, it comes down to officers' discretion, right? So if they don't want to write you a ticket for not having a seatbelt on, or for speeding, or running a red light, they don't have to write you a ticket. There's nothing their boss doesn't say, oh, if you don't write every single person a ticket, a cop can let you. I've been let go with weed. I've been let go with booze when I was underage. So, you know, the fact that there's this war on drugs, it's still a class A substance, you know, right there with heroin, I think is
ridiculous,
completely ridiculous. I didn't know that. And that's why I think it's the system that really needs to be changed, because I haven't seen anyone make it better, really.
No. And I'm glad that you did mention too about like the amount of money and the figures that we've spent. That's $47 billion spent annually on the war on drugs.
Yeah.
When we could be using that for so many other things. And out of, like, all of that, in 52% of the arrests, like, I was looking at ACLU's website, and 52% of the arrests in 2010 were just over marijuana. So $47 billion just to arrest people over marijuana when it's legal in some states, and it's not even anywhere near as bad as heroin. Oh, my God. Nor is it bad. It's got medicinal benefits.
Yeah, and heroin's proven. A lot worse.
Well, heroin is deadly.
Well, like, it's like the meme to the war on drugs, but the drugs keep on winning. You can't keep drugs out of prisons. You can't keep drugs out of schools. So is 100% legalization of all drugs the answer? No, probably not.
No.
But, you know, certainly the way it's designed right now is not working. And there needs to be a drastic change. You know, something needs to be declassified there. You know, a coca plant, cocaine has medicinal benefits. You know what I mean? So you look at countries, Switzerland, Portugal, where they have certain drugs decriminalized. You can, I think in Switzerland, you can go to a hospital with your heroin and they will help inject it for you or with you.
Oh, wow.
Just because crazy. Now the Swiss people are a lot smarter, more intelligent, and better off than this country, but it's also the size of West Virginia, so it's hard to compare the two. But you know, I think when you have treatment instead of punishment. I mean, if we're talking jail and prisoners, you know, the term recidivism is how often someone ends up going back to jail, because when they get out, what options do they have? Especially
offend again.
Yeah, especially, you know, this guy's in 31 years. Now, I always like to know details. When it says he was arrested for trafficking, was it 12 pounds? Was it 12 ounces? I mean, listen, I still don't think 12 pounds of marijuana is. Now, if you're, you know, if you have an operation with armed guards and intentionally harm somebody in the drug trade, then, you know, I think there's a place for people that
100 pounds.
100 pounds. Wow. Okay.
From Colombia to Florida.
Okay.
All right. I mean, that's a little trafficky, but nonviolent.
Right.
You know,
of course.
It's nonviolent. So, but that's the longest nonviolent serving criminal ever.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So nonviolent crimes.
Nonviolent crimes.
This is what we were talking about earlier as well. This term, this term called jury nullification.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me about it, and I didn't really know too much about it, so I'd love to hear more, and I'm sure Ozzy would like to hear as well.
Yeah, what exactly is that?
So jury nullification is the concept. It's been around since our founding fathers, but jury nullification is, for the most part, no victim, no crime. So if we're all jurors at a trial for somebody who's on trial for, let's say, drug possession, okay? Let's say they were caught with 10 pounds, which I guess because someone somewhere once said over a certain amount of weight, that's considered distribution or trafficking, right? So 100 pounds, you're a trafficker. Yeah, I would maybe agree with that, but you know, I know people that have large grow operations for dispensaries and states up in New England, and so I'm sure they would have 100 pounds. Now they have permits and everything else, but
right, but they would still be transporting it.
Sure, but if there's no victim, there should be no crime. So jury nullification is if you're on a jury and you're hearing a case and this person didn't hurt anybody, a traffic violation, a drug possession charge, then it's almost our civic duty to make sure this person doesn't go to jail, because it also sends a message to prosecutors, judges, police, that if you're going to arrest people for, let's just stick with possession of marijuana, cannabis. If you're going to arrest people, then we're going to make sure that there's going to be jurors that understand that they should make sure this person is not convicted and goes to jail for something that they didn't hurt anybody but themselves. Are we not supposed to be able to do what we want to our own bodies? You know, is that
yeah, exactly.
Right. You know?
So jury nullification is it's one of those concepts where it doesn't get talked about because really, again, going back to the system, like prosecutors and judges, they don't want you to know about that because it kind of makes it unfair. We watch these, you know, TV shows where you know, a prosecutor gets to pick a jury, right? They get to pick, oh, I don't like this person. This person's anti-police. I don't want them on my jury. Well, that's not fair. Like, it's supposed to be a jury of your peers. It's supposed to be 12 random people. You're not supposed to. The state can't.
Pick and choose.
Yeah, the state can't go through and pick the ones that are going to decide all in their favor. So, you know, it's kind of a rigged system the way it is now. So jury nullification is, you know, one of the things we have as citizens, where if we're called upon this duty to go sit in and hear some case, if we don't think there was a crime committed against another person, then we should not send this person to jail. So a lot of times they're already in jail, so you can just say, okay, time served, and this person can go home now. Why should we ruin this person's life because they just chose to do something with their body, you know? So
that's true.
Preach, brother, preach.
Yeah, I think honestly, when we talk about it that way, it makes a lot of sense. Like, why should we be convicting people for doing things to themselves?
Yeah.
What? Like, what?
Well, that's like the whole suicide that they don't search it or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So on our last case that we just did, the police ruled her death a suicide, but it was very obvious a homicide. So when they rule a death a suicide, they just stop investigation, obviously, because there's nothing to investigate. So Ozzy doesn't like that very much because he's like, this is clearly a murder. And
yeah, like, you have the evidence right on your face.
Yeah, but they didn't care for some reason. So
yeah, well, also, yeah. If you have a homicide that goes unsolved, you know, mm-hmm. that affects your clearance rate for you know, solved murders. So if you just make it a suicide, then it doesn't affect those numbers, and like you said, it no longer has to be an open investigation. So
yep, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate.
I didn't even know those terms that you guys were talking about.
Jury nullification is a new concept to myself as well. I heard it about 2 years ago. And part of what I would like to do someday in this cannabis community is be able to reach more people and talk about things like jury nullification and legalization and things like that.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah, we can go vote, and you know, there's other things we can do, but you know, voting has its limitations as well. If we're voting for someone else to make a decision for us, then you know what I mean,
then they don't vote for what you want.
Yeah,
then
they can say one thing and then easily be swayed in the other direction for
exactly,
you know, money or something else. So right. Especially where we have this community where, you know, as I said before, all shapes, sizes, colors, right? You know, we go to events and anybody's smoking with anybody, right? It's not mm-hmm. like a country music yeah, like festival.
Everyone like loves each other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah. I think this is the perfect community to, you know, talk about some concepts where something like jury nullification, it's something we can all understand very easily because we realize like, yeah, I shouldn't go to jail because I just smoked this joint, fell asleep on my couch, or you know what I mean?
Right. Ate a pizza.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's definitely a great point, and that's good. I really appreciate you bringing that up, and I think our listeners can definitely benefit from that as well. I actually have jury duty. I got called for jury duty. So I have that coming up.
For me, it's like knowledge.
Yeah. So I don't know. Jury duty should be interesting. It'll be a great field research, if anything. Not that I won't be able to talk about it, but
I'll tell you my quick jury duty story. I went to jury duty and I'm like, ah, man, I was just annoyed that I had to take time out of my day to go do this.
Yep.
Yeah.
And of course, at some point, so I took a book with me and I'm like, I'm going to read this book while I'm here, see how much I can get through it. So, I think it was 9 o'clock or whatever, 8:30 we started. At some point, a judge comes in, talks about what a great thing it is we're all doing. He leaves. I never see that guy again. And then, I did go into one room with, there was 24 of us, and they said 12 of you may be picked to hear this case today. They told us the information of the case. Then we went back in. I think they did take the 12, but I forget. Anyways, the day is basically over. 3 o'clock, I think they said if we didn't hear anything by 3 o'clock, then they weren't going to start a new case or something. So 3 o'clock comes, and they said, all right, everybody can go. I had like 5 or 6, maybe 8 pages left in this book. And the guy comes over, and he's like, hey, you can go. And I'm like, yeah, no, I heard you, but I want to finish my book. And he's like, well, there's nobody in here. You have to leave. I'm like, now I have to leave. You know, like, you're on my time now. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, I got 5 pages left in this book. So he did. He let me sit there and read it. But, I mean, the court was open another hour.
Sounds like me. Yeah. That sounds like me, honestly.
I think he was just, he wanted to lock the door and have one less responsibility. But, you know,
jury trials is something where the more we know about how much the state has control in a jury trial, the better that, especially if it is your peers, right? I mean, you're not mm-hmm. you're not going out to California to hear some case out there. Like, you're hearing something that's local to you, so it right. A lot of it can affect you. So these concepts, they go back. There's this guy Lysander Spooner from the 1700s. He was an abolitionist, he was an anarchist, he was a lawyer and an entrepreneur from New England, actually from Boston. Mm-hmm. And he started the first mail letter company to compete with the post office, and because he could do it better, cheaper, and faster, the U.S. Postal Service kept lowering the price. I'm sorry, this is the 1800s, 1860s. This is when he was around. Mm-hmm. But he was writing about the American Revolution basically 100 years later, because he saw it back then, the jury trials and everything else, and how this was one of the main things that we have as citizens, to be able to stand up for our simple rights. We see this with nullification in general. State nullification is the federal government says marijuana is illegal. Well, Massachusetts and Colorado and Washington, those states said, we don't care. It's legalized. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's nullification on a state level. They can say, oh, well, we don't abide by what the federal government thinks. So that's mm-hmm. that's on a different scale. But jury nullification is where you and I have the ability. You have the ability, Sam.
It's just crazy how these different states are like opening up and basically legalizing these cannabis businesses, you know,
and the federal just won't do it.
I mean, look at Thailand just literally just legalized marijuana over there.
I think they needed to, though, because with like COVID and everything, their tourism was so yeah. down, and they like rely heavily on tourism in Thailand, so I think they kind of needed to legalize.
Well, everyone also was doing it, too.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. Well, just wait for a year or two from now when they start releasing numbers on how much they made or how much tourism increased. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you yeah. look at these pockets of, you know, like Washington and Colorado, the first two states that legalized, how many people were taking vacations to Colorado because they wanted to be able to smoke weed. It's a beautiful state. So I mean, I think hopefully more countries will follow suit when, you know, like I said, when a year or two from now they start releasing some numbers and all of a sudden, wow, they made how much money, how many more people started going to Thailand. So that's a great thing. Yeah, I look forward to seeing what happens there.
Same here.
Yeah. All right, well,
I just want to say thanks for having me on today.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Ozzy, we're definitely going to get you on your episode of My First Time, so we'll...
Oh, nobody wants to hear that. It's just an embarrassing story. And it's the only reason why she wants to, me to tell it is because it happened with her.
Oh, it was really funny, but we're not going to talk about it on here. You could talk about it on your podcast because it is gold. It is comedy gold.
It was pretty it was embarrassing to the point where she recorded it.
I recorded it. I don't have it anymore, unfortunately, or else I would send it to you. But I it was hilarious. He made me delete it, though, so I deleted it. But
well, yeah, no. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for coming. And again, where can we find you and all of your things that you do?
You can go basically, we're pretty much everywhere at DroTV, DROTV, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and come check us out. Sam's episode will be dropping soon. Maybe it'll be out by the time this comes out or not. So maybe we can put a link in there, but definitely go check out our YouTube and some of our episodes, and keep doing what you're doing, Cushion Crime Podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Same to you.
Thank you for having us on as well, and I'm sure Ozzy is very excited to tell his very embarrassing story.
Excited to have an interview with you, but not excited to tell my first time.
No worries. It'll be super laid back and chill. So.
All right. Well, bye, everybody. And as always, stay lifted.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.